Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, man. And joining me to do just that is the one and only Dalton Del Don. Dalton, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. My Niners did not look great over the weekend. We have some big signings to talk about. So I'm excited, man. What's up, Harmon?
Man, things are good. I still feel like I'm mildly in recovery from a sleep perspective from the Fantasy Football Expo over the weekend.
That's right.
But yeah.
I meant to ask you about that. How was it?
Oh, it was great, dude. I mean, you got to make it out there next year.
Yeah, I was jealous. It looked like a lot of fun for sure. I totally meant to ask you about that. So it was worth the trip.
Oh, yeah, definitely worth the trip. It was my first one. I will try to be going back every single year. Again, not recovered from a body clock perspective. And, you know, especially since Monday, just threw a ton of news at us. It was like right back to it, man. You know how that can be sometimes. Like you take some time off and you wish you had a little more time off to recover from the time off. But the NFL did not give us any time off yesterday, which is why we have a big show here today. We are going to be continuing our strategy week discussion here on the podcast with a look at how to construct the perfect roster at each position for 2023. And speaking of perfect rosters, any fantasy team that starts with Justin Jefferson is pretty far along the way to being perfect. So it's fitting that he's going to join me at the end of this show for a great conversation. Please stay tuned until the end for that. But like I said, we have some big news that went down basically since the moment we stopped recording with Scott on Monday, which is always great when the timing works like that. So yesterday, Dalton, move we kind of have been talking about for a while, it finally happens. The Jets signed running back Dalvin Cook to a one-year up to, drink if you hear the word, up to this offseason, and you might have been in the hospital a few times, $8.6 million contract up to for Dalvin Cook. According to Adam Schefter, though, Dalvin Cook is still at least a week away from being able to practice after undergoing shoulder surgery in February. Cook's New York arrival will also be delayed due to the fact that he will become a first-time father any day now. Shout out to Dalvin Cook. So it's going to be a bit before he's on the field. In other Jets news, Breece Hall, who this obviously directly impacts, was activated from the PUP Tuesday morning. And Dalton, I know you will be happy to hear this sort of extended reporting on the entire thing. Connor Hughes, who does a great job covering the team for SNY, says that this is still Breece Hall's team. He's the Jets' bell cow back the moment he's back. I don't know what the moment he's back means, considering he's not on the PUP now. Again, Hughes continues by saying Cook isn't stealing touches from him. He's spelling and helping him. This also isn't an indictment on Hall's health, I'm told. He is still on schedule. And again, the schedule continued today by him being taken off the PUP. So a lot of stuff going on in the Jets backfield, Dalton. Where do we stand?
So this signing is just clearly bad news for those like myself who've already drafted Breece Hall, if for no other reason that his ADP is sure to drop. So your closing line value has been lost here as a third round Hall. But moving forward, it could actually be good news for those who like Hall, because now you may get him in the fifth or sixth round because someone who's 28 years old, Dalvin Cook, he signed there. Cook ranked 35th out of 37 qualified backs in rush yards over expectation. He ranked 32nd in yards per route run. He's not great on passing downs. And secondly, I just would like to say we're dealing with incomplete information here. You know, it's great news that Hall came off the PUP, but Cook hasn't even been cleared to practice yet. Now, that shoulder surgery could also make him perform better this year. I will admit that. But, you know, did Aaron Rodgers restructure his contract, you know, for this reason, and they're appeasing him? Or do the coaches really want Dalvin Cook here? So We are still dealing with incomplete information, but man, I think that Breece Hall looks like the next special back. We were always going to have to slow play it with him a little bit anyway, returning from that ACL surgery. But last year with a bad quarterback situation and being a rookie, he averaged 97 yards from scrimmage on 14.1 touches per game. Nearly 100 yards from scrimmage, 14 touches per game, scored 5 touchdowns in essentially 6 games, led all running backs in air yards over those 6.5 games. Yeah. So, man, I remain very optimistic on Hall. I ranked him still as a top 12 fantasy back. Certainly should be top 15 still. You may not even have to draft him that way. I've seen others rank Cook ahead of him. I've seen multiple people do that. I've seen, I have Cook, you know, as an RB3, you know, or my RB36, I think. But man, others strongly disagree with me here. But I'm taking a stance, and I think this is actually good news moving forward if you like Breece Hall, because you might possibly get him in the fifth or sixth round.
I think it's really good news. You're right. If you want to get a little bit of an ADP discount here on Breece Hall. And here's the interesting thing about this. for one, like, even when Breece Hall was cooking last year, this team still used a lot of like pony personnel, two tailbacks on the field. Like, Michael Carter was on the field with Breece Hall a lot. Like, in the early parts of the season, they were using both those guys on the field. Now, as a different offensive coordinator, Mike LaFleur was the offensive coordinator there. We know they've moved on to Nathaniel Hackett now. But maybe Hackett wants to take some of those plays for Cook and Hall to be on the field together. I don't think it's the worst idea in the world, even though Michael Carter is like a fine back. You know, Zonovan Knight was fine in relief duty last year, but maybe they're looking for an upgrade on those two guys with Dalvin Cook here and using that, I guess. Here's the thing. I know it's like, I mean, I don't know.
I think the Israel guy, Izzy, looks awesome. And I really think there's a non-zero chance that he could be as good as a 28-year-old Dalvin Cook. But maybe I'm crazy. But I mean, Cook is not good as a receiver either, is a thing. So carry on.
No. You're right about that. But I think what they can do there is like, all right, if they're going to have like Breece Hall be kind of like, I mean, again, to stick in the same coaching tree. You know, Breece Hall, and at times this hasn't been good for Aaron Jones's fantasy value, but they've used him as like eye candy, window dressing stuff, like motioning him around. Maybe Breece Hall, they have like some of that in mind for him. And then like, okay, that opens things up where Dalvin Cook then gets another guy out of the box, right? And has clearer rushing lanes. I think this team wants to be really creative with its usage of running backs and wants to run. I think they want to run the ball a lot. There is that. Like, part of my pushback with Scott, and we were talking about quarterbacks yesterday, and Aaron Rodgers having like any sort of big time fantasy season, is that the scenario that Scott painted out where this would happen all the time with Green Bay, where they'd get up to these big leads and Rodgers would have an awesome game, but it'd be like 250 and two touchdowns, maybe mega efficient. That's what's going to happen, I think, in New York a lot, because I think the defense is going to be good. I think they're going to run the ball a lot. So I think these guys could both be on the same field, on the field at the same time. I think that if you are drafting a team that wants to get off to a little bit of like a hotter start, I don't think Dalvin Cook is you could pick him in that RB3 range and be okay with that. And I think he might have some standalone value all year long, even if this is truly Breece Hall's team. I just think Breece Hall, they probably, and maybe this is good all the time, but especially coming off an injury, they don't want him to be like a 20-touch workhorse type of back. They want him to be more efficient, again, in that sort of Aaron Jones mold for Breece Hall. And we think he can be super efficient. We've talked about the receiving stuff. We've talked about how explosive he is as a runner. That does make sense for him from a typological standpoint. I just think the one thing we've seen this all offseason is that the Jets want to add a back, right? There were rumors that they were in the mix for Jahmyr Gibbs. There were rumors they were in on Jamal Williams in free agency, and they've been sniffing around Dalvin Cook for a long time. So it does seem to me that they want to add that like second back, and maybe it is simply to make their pony personnel package better, which was very good last year when Breece Hall was healthy.
So the Willy Wonka GIF is just was so perfect of him on the cane and then popping up right after the signing. Breece Hall comes off the pup literally the next morning. So you love to see that. And it should also be noted, great news for Dolphins running backs. Dalvin Cook did not sign there. So fantasy boost for Jeff Wilson and Devin Achane.
Yep. What about Raheem Mostert? Your guy Raheem Mostert.
I love Mostert. I'd love to see him stay healthy. Yeah, for sure. Mostert as well. You're right. I'd be remiss to omit Mostert.
But yeah, I mean, that's going to be like a moving target committee type situation. But those guys are definitely like back on the late round radar more so, I think, for me. I agree that it's good news for those guys. And just again, final thoughts just on the Jets here. I think this team is going to be very good, and I think they're going to use their backs a lot. And I know it's like, OK, big deal. They're going to have two back sets. That always seems like it's a good, better idea in theory than it is in reality. But we saw that be a good idea in reality for this team last year. And again, different coordinator, all that stuff. And also, like, if they're just looking to add a little juice to their offense, which I think they need, because this receiver core is, it's going to all revolve around Garrett Wilson and a bunch of like role players. They don't have really, I think even Corey Davis is close to like a starting number two receiver, but he was injured last year. He's been kind of an up and down player. I don't think Lazard is a true two. I think they have a bunch of options at tight end, but they don't have like one difference maker potentially. So it's just like, if we're talking about the most explosive players on the team right now, it's one alpha receiver and it's probably the two running backs, which is funny because it sounds an awful lot like the Aaron Rodgers Green Bay Packers, between 2018 and 2020.
Yeah, Lazard is fine in his buddy and a great real life blocker, you know, and all that special teams. But this team really is arguably one of the thinnest in the pass catchers after Garrett Wilson. So that's another notch for why Breece Hall will be so active. Again, led all backs in air yards last year, running like 250 or 350 fewer routes than McCaffrey. It was something crazy in 6.5 games as a rookie. So David Johnson level. Usage in the passing game. And boy, we know that. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is fine with that. He's happy to target Aaron Jones downfield. So I really think that some of that reaction yesterday was totally like, even in our, you know, I think Mo was so, was it him that spent 25 in the salary cap draft that I happened to miss yesterday on Breece Hall? Like that was horribly spent. And a lot, again, I've seen multiple people put Dalvin Cook over Breece Hall moving forward. And man, I just can't get behind that. And I really couldn't be more on the opposite side here.
I think you and I are on the same page that you can still draft Breece Hall. You just have to, be ready for a slow September, which, by the way, you probably always should have been, and just adjust otherwise. Like I mentioned the name Jamal Williams. I love taking, if you're going to take Breece Hall, take Jamal Williams, who's probably like going to moonwalk into 20 touches in the Saints backfield because Alvin Kamara is suspended and Kendre Miller is now banged up again. So yeah, that's just prepare your roster for Breece Hall to start slow because he could finish really, really hot if this team hits. It wasn't the only running back news that happened even in the AFC East yesterday. The Patriots signed running back Ezekiel Elliott to a one-year contract worth, again, baby, up to $6 million. Like, here's the thing, Dalton. If you were surprised by this, you haven't been listening to this podcast because we've been talking about it for a long time. Like Andy has basically said, like, you got to rank Ramondre Stevenson as if another back is going to come into this. And we posted that yesterday, I think, on Twitter. Like, and that's exactly what happened. We knew there was going to be some level of veteran running back added to the mix here for New England, because even Ramondre Stevenson, said he didn't want the workload, the snap share that he had last year because he started to feel worn down. So I didn't move Ramondre Stevenson down in my rankings at all because I was already ranking him like, yeah, he's probably going to get some competition added here. And it came in the form of Ezekiel Elliott.
Stevenson's an awesome runner, but he was kind of forced into this passing down role last year thanks to injuries and was incredibly inefficient. And yeah, if you paid attention to all the coaches and beat writers, New England was pretty convinced that they needed to upgrade their passing down back. Maybe, I mean, Ty Montgomery was always a long stretch. So now I think Zeke probably takes over that role. And maybe even more key is who takes over the short yardage role in New England, because Stevenson struggled a bit in that area. You're looking deeper in the stats, and it's probably no one back's better than the other. But Zeke, maybe he's declining even in pass protection as he is the rest of his game. But boy, he's a really good pass protector throughout his career. Coaches like to give him snaps. So I think this definitely isn't a great news for Stevenson. But I always ranked him, like you said, as if they were going to bring in a sub back, which Bill O'Brien coaches, you know, always usually have. So I have Ramondre Stevenson as my RB12 before the signing and kept him there afterward.
Yeah, he's
and
my
no interest
RB
in Zeke. No interest in Zeke.
Yeah, he's my RB11, so same range. And again, like, I know that sounds high. Like, well, how can you say running back 11? But take a look at some of the running backs that come after him and some of the words that are in their profiles. And also, like, if we were talking about Ramondre Stevenson having the backfield all to himself, he'd probably be ranked like running back 7, running back 6,
yeah,
sort of
first,
like,
round pick, right.
Yeah, he'd be a first, second round pick, and he was not going there because we all knew that this was going to happen. It was to be expected. I mean, you go back and look at like Stevenson's game logs last year. There were definitely games where he was slow, like he was slowed down as a rusher. Like there was a 15 for 26, 1.7 yards per carry against the Jets. Great defense, of course, but still the Bengals game, 13 carries, 30 yards. Like some of these games where he was kind of inefficient as a rusher, because I think he was getting bogged down with that workload later in the season. Now he had some other really explosive games, but again, I think they want him to be more consistently explosive, consistently impactful. And that's why Zeke is here. The goal line stuff is definitely a problem, right? Like there's really no way of getting around that. Like Zeke could score what, like 6 touchdowns, 7 touchdowns this year and really rip those away from Ramondre Stevenson. That's definitely going to be a problem. That's a thing where we could see, but I thought this was interesting from Dwayne McFarland, who we had on the show last week, I think, he basically said like Ramondre Stevenson's still a good late third round pick to early fourth round pick. Doubt that Ezekiel Elliott gets more work than Damian Harris. And I know we think that Harris didn't play a ton last year, but this was Ramondre Stevenson's output in games with a healthy Damian Harris in 2022. 46% share of the team rush attempts, 61% route participation, 20% target share, 61% short yardage, 73% long down and distant, 100% in the two-minute drill. That will be interesting to see if that changes with Zeke, but I doubt it. And overall, 15.8 PPR points per game for Ramondre Stevenson. So I think we're kind of on the same page here that Stevenson is still a fine pick in fantasy. I just don't think Zeke at this point of his career can be, I think he can be a very valuable role-playing back in the NFL. But it's not like a guy that's going to be a true 1B of a committee.
One final point I'd like to add on that you made is who are you going to drop him below? And after the top eight backs, nine, if you're counting me, because I love Jahmyr Gibbs, but really after that top eight tier, it is wide open. I mean, exact. That's why I kept Breece Hall around the same, because I'm sorry. I mean, yes, Josh Jacobs, Najee Harris, and Joe Mixon, you can comfortably, their floor is higher than these guys. Although Mixon is in court, and who knows if Jalen Warren gets more. I mean, there's question marks with all these guys. So Josh Jacobs isn't even, you know, he's currently still holding out. So that's the thing. When all these guys have question marks, personally, I'd rather the younger guys with upside, Breece Hall, Ramondre Stevenson, and J.K. Dobbins, which we'll talk about next here. I'm going to those guys.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious. Like, you just go down the list at running back right now. I think once you get past my running back 10, which is Joe Mixon, and again, I don't even feel great about that. It's like Ramondre Stevenson has his Ezekiel Elliott problem. Travis Etienne probably has a Tank Bigsby problem. Najee Harris might have a Jalen Warren problem. Aaron Jones probably has an AJ Dillon problem. Breece Hall clearly has a Dalvin Cook problem. Kenneth Walker has a Zach Charbonnet problem. Alexander Mattison, I got a running back 17. He might, I don't even know. Like he might have a somebody problem. He might not, right? Like that's up in the air. Miles Sanders, he doesn't have a problem, so like maybe he should be up there. I don't know. He's got a groin injury right now. There's that. Jahmyr Gibbs is sharing a backfield with David Montgomery. Like, there's just a lot of dudes that have committee backfields right now. Like, that's just the way it is. So once you get past like running back 10, if you're complaining about, oh no, Zeke Elliott's added to Ramondre Stevenson's backfield, well, look at all the other guys and the players they have in the same backfield with them. It's like, give me a break. This is the reality of the position right now.
Totally. So, like I said, after that top tier, just so many question marks. Everyone's board is going to look differently. Everyone's draft will look differently. So just take whom falls. And I love it with a guy like Breece Hall, who I say top 10 upside if he falls to the end of that tier now with this news. I love it. But yeah, that's so we're on the same page here with Stevenson. It's obviously not ideal. It's not great news, but that is why he was going in the third round and not the first and second.
Ravens head coach John Harbaugh said that J.K. Dobbins is, quote, 100% healthy. Dobbins was also activated off the PUP list and returned to practice on the same day yesterday. I know neither of us is probably like super crazy about J.K. Dobbins in fantasy, but this is a good thing to see.
No, I am super crazy. I think he's going to go off.
Really?
I don't have any crazy cool stats. I've been drafting this holdout was a hold in. I mean, it was not an injury. It's not injury related. We all saw him hobble on that long run last year with that messed up knee. Supposedly he is healthy now. He's what is his yards per carry throughout his career? 5.9. I get that he's not going to get targeted and Lamar Jackson will steal some carries, but I have him as a top 15 back. Otherwise, he's going to be the feature back in an offense that could be special. I love him. Now, I'm in on J.K. Dobbins big time. He's one of my guys. You want me to name five running backs, he'd be one of my five guys this year.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I might be a little too low on J.K. Dobbins. Like, again, I think, especially because like Gus Edwards hasn't had the cleanest offseason either, you know?
Yeah, like, no one drafts a backup ever. There's like concerns, but Edwards goes free late and he's the only one. But yeah, no, it doesn't make sense. I mean, that's one of the offenses that everyone's so excited about, fighting each other to draft the three receivers and their tight end goes top two. Everyone loves Lamar this year. I think J.K. Dobbins finally healthy. 5.9 career yards per carry. Normally, I like guys getting targets, but man, I think people are really worried about this pup list. Maybe his ADP rises here in the next 3 weeks, but boy, I loved him in the last couple of weeks of drafts.
Yeah, I'm looking, and I think that there's a case to be made that I could definitely move him ahead of some of these guys that I said have like obvious committee issues right now. Because this offense, even if they pass the ball more, and they're going to pass the ball more, they're going to look different. J.K. Dobbins already a mega efficient rusher on a team that is still going to lean run heavy. And now, and I talk about this all the time, like they're going to play more 11 personnel. They're going to spread the field. They're not going to be this like heavy personnel, freaking Pat Ricard, you know, like playing this with the offensive line now. Like he's not going to be lining up as the slot receiver anymore. Spreading the field out like that can be even more like the opening up the running lanes, more efficiency for a guy like J.K. Dobbins, who is already super efficient. So you're pushing on this a little bit.
Can I also counter real quick people that are drafting Miles Sanders ahead of him? I get that the coaching staff want him to get more targets, but Sanders ranks last in yards per target and catch rate among all qualified backs since 2020, dead last in PFF's receiving grade last season. He has not recorded a receiving touchdown since 2019. It is wild to me that Miles Sanders went from the league's best environment to one of the worst, and his ADP has risen.
I'm in on Miles Sanders this year, though. Like, I think he can catch passes fine. Like, he was fine as a rookie. He had that one, like, crazy outlier season where he had an absurd drop rate. So, I mean, hey, that might matter a little bit, but we know drops can be random and stuff like that, especially at the running back position. I think that's perfectly plausible, but it's just like nobody was going to thrive as a receiver the last couple of years in the Eagles offense. It's just like, why would you throw the ball on like designed downfield targets to Miles Sanders when you have AJ Brown, Devonta Smith and Dallas Goedert? Let me tell you what, the Panthers don't have anybody in that category. So I think they're going to involve him a lot as a receiver. And even though the environment is not the same as the Eagles, I think the Panthers offensive line's good. They ran the ball well last year, and I think the defense is going to be good. So like those are positive situations for running backs. But I'm a little concerned about the preseason groin injury right now.
Yeah, we'll see. I know people are definitely higher on Sanders than myself, but I am less conviction about that one, more so excited about Dobbins for sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely, you're pushing me on the Dobbins thing a little bit. Like maybe I'm a little too low on him right now that he's healthy and off the PUP. Last bit of news yesterday. I know this isn't a fantasy player, but it matters a lot that the Cowboys restructured the contract of offensive guard, awesome player, one of the legends of the franchise, Zach Martin. It ends his holdout, according to producer Colin in the chat. It means everything. We know it means everything to you, Colin. $18 million in each of the final 2 years of his contract. It's a good compromise, I think, between player and team there. And it was just important that they get Zach Martin in camp because he is one of the true needle moving offensive linemen. And it sort of caps off what's a really good day for Tony Pollard, right? Like Tony Pollard getting Zach Martin back, that's huge because it's just going to make the entire offensive line better. Yo, if you've been watching preseason football, our colleague Charles McDonald wrote about this on Yahoo. Preseason football is a great reminder that offensive line depth around the NFL is not great. So anytime you get a guy like this back in the fold here, it's good news for the running back. It's also good news. There's no more specter of Zeke. There's no more specter of Dalvin Cook. I don't know. Maybe they add like Leonard Fournette or Kareem Hunt. But I think the fact that Zeke is not back with this team officially now, that can no longer happen for Tony Pollard. He's one guy I just feel great about this year.
Yeah, I love it. Pollard has been my number two back throughout most of summer. You don't have to draft him that way, though. I mean, get Bijan in the first and then Pollard in the second. But great news. The recent, as you said, Zach Martin, huge. And Ronald Jones got injured and suspended, too. Really clearing the pathway there. I kid, but what are your thoughts on Deuce Vaughn just tearing it up? Can he do this against first string? I mean, is he the RB2 to draft in Dallas now? But couldn't agree more about Tony Pollard. Love him. Should be top five fantasy back on all boards. But what are we doing with Deuce Vaughn?
Yeah, by the way, you are really screwing up the ADP for people who want to draft Tony Pollard on Yahoo this year. And Andy is really screwing up the ADP for people who want to draft Nick Chubb in the second round this year. So shout out to you guys for just absolutely blowing people's spots there. But I agree with you, Tony Pollard. I don't have him that high. I have him at six, which is, I think, the only person who's I'm the second highest to you on Yahoo. But Deuce Vaughn, look, I mean, Colin's been going berserk about Deuce Vaughn all weekend, right? I didn't even see Colin for multiple hours because he was just glued to the preseason at the expo this weekend, just glued to the TV, glued to his phone, watching Deuce Vaughn highlights. It's funny because we are like our Uber ride over to the expo on Saturday morning. I was like, you know, these guys, they always say they're like the next Darren Sproles, and Colin's like, yeah, I'm probably too high on him. And then by the end of the damn, like, you know, Sunday, I text Colin, yeah, maybe he is the next Darren Sproles. I don't know that he can do this against first stringers and stuff like that. He can carry a big workload, everything, but I do think he's going to factor in a little bit. Like, we're all kind of overlooking Deuce Vaughn, I feel like, when looking for the RB2 on this team. But I think he's going to, Tony Pollard needs to be spelled, right? Like, he needs to not be a full every down player. And like, if they're throwing Deuce Vaughn out there, I think that could be good for the offense too, because he's got a little pop. So I'm just open to the idea that he's a role player for this team this year, and that they're comfortable with Deuce Vaughn being like a role player so that they don't need to add a back like Uncle Lenny or Kareem Hunt or anything.
Yeah, Vaughn leads all backs in yards after contact and avoided tackle percentage in the preseason. Pretty fun highlight player to watch. So yeah, it looks like he is creeping up to possibly being the RB2 there. And of course, yeah, Pollard, I'm not expecting 325 plus touches. He's just so efficient in such a good system. And I think he's going to put up a huge fantasy season approaching 300 touches. But yeah, great news with Zach Martin's return.
All right, some quick news that has happened so far today. Bigger day yesterday. I mean, we'll see what happens. We'll get off this damn podcast and, you know, some big news will break. Who knows? But a couple things to just clean up here quick today. NFL Network's Ian Rapoport reports that Mike Gesicki suffered a separated shoulder. He's hoping to be back by week one. But if you're drafting Mike Gesicki, you might want to be prepared to maybe just not go ahead and not do that and take another late round tight end and see what happens with Gesicki, who I already think has like kind of an up in the air role in this offense anyways. And more importantly, for our purposes, Dalton, Anthony Richardson is officially QB1 for the Colts. He was named the starter for the season by Shane Steichen. I just said to Scott yesterday on the show, that was what was going to happen. It's what needs to happen. I know, I'm sure you're excited about Anthony Richardson. I had already been ranking him as my QB13 because like I knew he was going to start week one. This is not a surprise. And I said this morning as well, it is mind bending to think about just how different this offense is going to look with Anthony Richardson captaining the unit this year versus what they looked like with the 2022 version of Matt Ryan. So even if, and you don't even have to think that Anthony Richardson is going to be any good. I think Richardson could be good at some point, that this is going to just change the offense dramatically with him there. And I really can't wait to watch it.
You should be drafting Hunter Henry as New England's tight end anyway, instead of Gesicki. Anthony Richardson was my QB 11 before the news. So he will remain there. I just assumed he was going to be the starter. It's a fascinating case, man. He was not great in college. Some people are skeptical, but the upside there is through the roof. We've just never seen an athlete like this play the quarterback position indoors with great coaching. The Steichen has been terrific with rookie quarterbacks, two in a row now, good receivers. So with his rushing floor, not just upside, but also floor that adds, I love him. I mean, it would be a dramatic catastrophe if he's not a top 12 fantasy QB, if he's starting right away, just given that rushing floor with upside for a top 5 finish right away as a rookie.
Yeah, he has to dramatically fail for him to not be a really good fantasy quarterback. I mean, it's like Justin Fields was pretty unspeakably bad as a efficiency wise as a passer, like statistically as a passer last year, and he was a great fantasy option. And I don't think they're going to run Anthony Richardson nearly as much as A, people think, or B, that the Chicago Bears ran Justin Fields. I think I'm just more curious to see what he does for these receivers, and I'm very much still in on Michael Pittman. I think my Alec Pierce is interesting, and I like Josh Downs as a long-term slot receiver. Like, that's what's encouraging about Anthony Richardson to me. He's not dropped into a situation where he is set up to fail. This is a really good situation. I like Shane Steichen. I think this offensive line can take another step. Really, just the big question is, are they going to get Jonathan Taylor like back in the fold? That is the one kind of like, I'd love it if Anthony Richardson was set up with like a big time running back next to him to do some creative run game stuff. But yeah, I think you and I are both on the same page that this is a really good situation for Anthony Richardson. And I think he's the late round quarterback. He's not. I do like Daniel Jones a lot, but him and Daniel Jones are like my two favorite late round quarterbacks that, like, based on their rushing upside, might have a top 5 ceiling, but will give you a really good floor.
And I love the fact that he didn't take sacks in college as well. So can't wait to watch him play, man. It's going to be exciting.
Love to see it. All right. That's going to do it for news. After the break here, we continue Strategy Week on the podcast and try to construct the perfect fantasy roster for you people out there this year. All right, Dalton, constructing a perfect fantasy roster. No pressure, right? You and I both agree we like more talking about players and like how guys might fit in situations and like who's really good at the game and all that stuff. So strategy-wise, what's kind of your attack plan in drafts this year? We've talked a lot about like how to form a quarterback plan and how that influences everything else. So we'll go position by position here in just a second. But like overall, what's your plan of attack this year?
I've settled into a strategy after doing numerous drafts over the summer, and assuming non-super flex, I am using my first 8 to 9 picks on running backs and wide receivers and waiting on quarterback and tight end, and usually double tapping quarterback around 9 and 10 or 10 and 11 and then tight end right after that. I'm okay. I don't really care in the beginning how you go. Personally, because I like Gibbs and Hall and Dobbins more than most, I'm getting running backs in the middle rounds, but I've even had a draft over the weekend where I started McCaffrey at 5 full PPR, Waddle in round two, and Jonathan Taylor fell to round three because of this situation. Yeah, then wow. I got Gibbs in round four. So I'm like an old school, you know, guy going three running backs in four. Then I just went four straight receivers. I think you should have five or six receivers after nine rounds. And then I'd love to get one or two bell cow running backs. You know, there are just very few of them. There's really only, like I said, eight basically that you can like comfortably project. So, and then if you have a couple other that you personally like myself and Hall, then make that your second back. So load up on receiver. Don't care if you do it first, second or third in any order, and running back, and then double up on quarterback and tight end, and then use those final five picks on your kickers, your defense, and your backup running backs. One other thing I will note, I've just really noticed, man, those final five rounds, receivers do not emerge, man. You don't just suddenly change yeah. your role like running backs. I'm totally okay with these upside rookie receivers you can just hold on to, guys that are going to emerge in the second half. Those are the receivers I like targeting in those final rounds, not the Richie Jameses of the world that Andy Barron's targets. You know, I really am avoiding the receivers.
Twice.
In those final, right, exactly. In those, from rounds 10 on, man, you're just really hard to find diamonds in the rough at receiver position. Maybe Nico Collins was there a little bit that profiled there. He's moving up, but that's been my strategy. What do you think of it, Harmon? What's yours?
Yeah, it's similar to mine. I still am not fully like late round quarterback like you are, but I think it's viable. And I think the one thing I've settled into, and this is, A little, we don't have to spend a ton of time on quarterback because we talked about it yesterday on the podcast with Scott. But like the one thing I will say that I am pretty firm on is that I'm definitely still open to taking Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. But like the bucket of quarterback that I'm no longer really taking is tier two, which to me is Joe Burrow. It's Justin Fields. It's Justin Herbert. And it's Trevor Lawrence. I know you still want to take Justin Fields out of that group, and I understand it. But like to me, I think that the upside case for Justin Fields is probably not getting into the elite tier. I think the Bears passing offense would have to be crazy high to get him there. And I think the median case for him is pretty much the upside case for Daniel Jones. Like it's the upside case for Anthony Richardson. And I think the same thing about Geno Smith with like Justin Herbert, with like Trevor Lawrence, even with Joe Burrow to a degree. Like I know that's crazy to say Geno Smith being that guy, but like again, the upside case for that guy is being like the median case for those players. So I really haven't been taking any players in that bucket at quarterback, and that's sort of where I agree that those later round guys, like I love the double tap approach this year as well, where I just did this in a draft the other day. It's like I took Daniel Jones in round 10, felt really great about that, and then came back a couple rounds later and was like, you know what, Geno Smith is still there, and I just like him as well. I think there's an upside case for him, so I'm going to take him as well.
I think you can win any of those three strategies. I've also taken Hurts in round two. I think he's going to have a huge year. You know, that tier one, they run unlike the other quarterbacks. That middle tier fields, I'll circle back to. Typically, I'm waiting rounds 9, 10, and 11, and I'm getting two of these guys. Tua, Daniel Jones, Anthony Richardson, or Geno Smith. I just love that pocket right there. And I realized after our quarterback discussion on the podcast, I didn't really hammer home YPA, kind of just use it as all other stats, though a lot of stats out there. But to me, it's just the gospel for quarterback, and it just means a ton to me. And I think it's no stat is perfect, and it also encompasses teammates and coaching and all that. But I think YPA I love very much when I evaluate the quarterbacks, and that's why I like Tua so much more than you. I saw the tier, you sent me your tiers earlier, and man, we are way off on Tua. Although I will say I'm little less bullish the more I think about the point that you do need three guys to really stay healthy for that to work. And I don't love that situation given that he doesn't run and all that.
Especially when one of them's already banged up. One of them's already banged up a little bit.
Yeah. Nah, I think Waddle's fine. So anyway, love Daniel Jones, love Anthony Richardson, love Geno Smith. And there's even, you know, Dak Prescott there too. So if you can get two of those guys, that is my preferred route. Or even if you want to wait a little more and get the Brock Purdy, Jared Goff, Russell Wilson, Sam Howell. Like, I mean, your league, all these little intricacies matter. But man, I think it's totally okay to wait on the quarterback position this year unless you want Justin Fields in round five. I've taken him over Lamar Jackson a couple of times. I don't know. I'm just confused with what you just said there about his upside. From week seven on, yes, it's an arbitrary point. I picked it when he started playing well last year. But from week seven on last year, here are the leading fantasy quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts averaged 26.2 points. Mahomes averaged 25.6. Fields averaged 25.4, and then it drops. Burrow, 21. Josh Allen, 21. So there were three clear tier guys in tier one over the second half last year, and Fields was right there. And are we expecting him to get worse now with an upgraded offensive line and DJ Moore and better, more seasoning? I mean, I'm projecting him to get better, but and he doesn't even have to get that much better as a passer. This guy's running is just the cheat code of all cheat codes, man. I mean, he's just running unlike quarterbacks. Right now, he's tied for the most rushing fantasy points per game in NFL history with Lamar Jackson. And maybe they want him to run a little less this year, but I think he's going to run like crazy and pass more efficiently and giddy up. If he was one of the worst passers in the past decade last year and still was basically the number one fantasy QB from week seven on.
So actually, I think that week seven is not an arbitrary point, because I think that is where I've talked about this before with Justin Fields, even have talked with Justin himself about this, that there was a clear come to Jesus moment between him and offensive coordinator Luke Getsy after that Washington game on Thursday night in Chicago. Oh,
that knocked me out of $6 million Survivor, this Fields game. Was that against the Patriots week seven? Is that when?
No. Week seven is the Patriots game. Week
That's what
six
I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying.
So week seven, I didn't realize I started on when he started ball. Yes. Perfect timing. Yeah. Oh, excellent. Oh, wow. I did not realize this. Okay. I knew he had, and I overlooked not only the Mac Jones injury situation that Monday night, but I overlooked the mini bye. Sorry. Chicago used that mini bye coming off the Thursday game to totally revamp the offense. So thank you. Carry on now. Sorry for my little offshoot there on Survivor. Continue.
Your offshoots on Survivor are always welcome to me, at least. Okay. But, you know, I think there was, like I said, that come to Jesus moment where it's like, we can't just run this traditional, you know, more West Coast like Packers offense that Luke Getsy's doing, like even some of the Shanahan style stuff with Justin Fields, with that offensive line, with that receiver core. So they tailored the offense to really focus on his rushing. But I mean, dude, I am very skeptical. And again, coming with the idea of having this conversation with Justin as well, like, I'm very skeptical. We were just watching the Eckler's Edge like sizzle reel, you know, because we had this conversation with Justin at the end of the season for the Super Bowl with me and Eckler and Justin, and like talking about how there was only 1,000 yard rusher on that stage between the three of us, and it wasn't me and it wasn't Austin, it was Justin Fields. And Justin was like not into the fact that they had him running that much. I don't think he wants to run that much. I don't think the team wants him to run that much again. I mean, look at his game log last year. There was a stretch where he goes 15 carries, 13 carries, 18 carries. You know what the next game was? Inactive. He didn't play because I think he was getting way too banged up. Like, he's certainly going to have games like the Detroit Lions game where, by the way, he was awful as a passer. I don't think he's going to have these type of games necessarily all the time, but like 10 carries for 132 yards. Those games are going to exist for Justin Fields, like when he just rips off like 13, you know, average yards on 10 carries. But how much they were using him as a designed rusher last year, I don't think that's going to happen as much this year, because I don't think he can survive that. I think they did that to survive last season, not necessarily like that's the plan going forward. But you know what? I am speculating there. I don't know that for sure.
He was number one in fantasy points per snap last year, has the most improved schedule of any fantasy quarterback this year. It's a dramatic, what went from extremely difficult to extremely favorable. But yes, if your argument is Fields is going to run less this year, then that would hurt him big time. And it's nothing I can really counter other than that's why I love this brief window when he's 24 years old, still super raw as a passer, and he's just going to be forced to run. I don't think this is going to be 2 years from now he's going to be the number one. Absolutely not. When he's a better passer. No. I think his fantasy peak is right now, because he's going to run more than ever.
Maybe you're right. I just think he needs to make up a lot of ground as a passer to have the access to enter tier one. But if he runs like that, and I'm just speculating there, but if he runs like that again this year, I'm going to be wrong. And he'll be a top three fantasy quarterback there. So that's certainly possible. Like, okay, enough quarterback stuff, because we've talked a lot about quarterback, but let's talk running backs here. I think you and I, it sounds pretty similar, are approaching this year with like the hero running back, the what they call it, you know, the strategy where I like taking one of those guys early in the draft, whether it's it just depending on where you fall. And this is the funny thing about strategy, Dalton, and why it's like kind of eye rolling to me sometimes. You know what your strategy is going to look like? It's going to look like what your individual draft board looks like, because if I am at pick six and be like, well, I don't want to draft a running back, but you know who's on the board here? It's Christian McCaffrey, or it's like Austin Eckler. I'm taking one of those guys, right? Because they're from an overall rankings perspective, that's how I want to go. But anyways, like, I want to take one of those guys in the first round, or I want to take like a Nick Chubb or a Tony Pollard or Bijan Robinson. I think he's more of like a early second than a first round pick necessarily in fantasy this year, but it's not like there's a ton of other options. I haven't ranked as running back 5. I have Derrick Henry as running back 4. So if he ever falls to the third round, he does fall to the third round, I'm clicking him every single time. But I want to take one of those guys early. And then I think we're on the same page where then I like to pluck from tier 4 at running back. So I sent you my tiers this morning. We talked about this group where I have it running back tier 3, like Joe Mixon, Ramondre Stevenson, Travis Etienne, Najee Harris. It's like I have those guys ranked there, but I almost never click that bucket of players because I think the guys that are available typically in the quote dead zone, running back tier 4 for me, anywhere from 14 to 25, that's the place I like getting my running back to.
I don't love the running backs in round 1. I did take McCaffrey fell to pick 5 in PPR, but typically I take receiver there. Happy with an early pick, Jefferson or Chase or Kupp even still. But I'm totally cool with St. Brown or even Garrett Wilson. I'd love the wheel. St. Brown and Garrett Wilson, 11 and 12. And because I'm higher on Pollard, that's when I attack running back. Get Pollard round 2, get Gibbs or Hall a little bit later there, Dobbins. That Jonathan Taylor falls to you round 3 now. That's a snap draft right there too. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah, receiver round 1 and then running back some combo 2 through 5. I get about 2 of them and then again attack the wide receiver position in between and afterward.
All right, let's talk receivers then and how to kind of attack that position in a perfect roster. Actually, sorry, let's double back to running backs real quick. Because I know people want to hear about this stuff. Like the running back, you know, insurance guys or whatever. Do you typically do that? For me, I don't typically, if I'm taking Bijan Robinson, I'm not necessarily taking Tyler Algier. One, because I don't think he's like a traditional insurance policy only back. I think there's a chance he has some standalone value, right? So that's not even a great example, but like a, you know, I'm not, just because I'm taking one running back does not mean I'm taking their backup. That was JJ Zacharyson's done great work on this, how that's like an insurance policy. It's like a floor raising move. I would rather, if I'm taking backup running backs, and especially once we get deeper into the season, you know, taking these upside guys on the waiver wire, like I'd rather have, if I have Bijan Robinson, I'd rather have Jonathan Taylor's backup or Saquon Barkley's backup or Josh Jacobs's backup, because then if that starter gets injured, I now have 2 starting running backs instead of 1. So just real quick, do you typically draft this way or what?
Yeah, in the league, I drafted McCaffrey. I took our guy Freiermuth in round 10, and I missed Elijah Mitchell because of it. And I'm okay with it. But Mitchell would be like one of the, although he's always hurt too, and he currently is too. But
yeah,
he's kind of an interesting backup for McCaffrey. But again, not perfect there. And Tyrion Davis Price may emerge to be the RB3 there, and he's completely free in drafts. But in general, no, I'm the person being the jerk drafting other people's backups, not my security guy. So no, but I do like drafting backup running backs because I do believe they are the guys that emerge far more than wide receivers in those rounds 12 through 20.
Yep. It's just, I agree with you. It's the upside play. And that's one thing. If your draft strategy with running back is simply the phrase chaos rules, and I'm going to try to lean into chaos, that's probably a pretty good strategy at the running back position, in my opinion, because chaos does rule at that position. Wide receivers. I think you and I are both on the same page about being kind of wide receiver heavy, basically. And again, my first tier at receiver, it's pretty similar with everybody else. It's Justin Jefferson, it's Jamar Chase, it's Cooper Kupp, it's Tyreek Hill. Although I'm kind of tempted to bump Tyreek Hill to tier 2, but that's a different discussion. Anyways, and then, you know, kind of tier 2 is Diggs and AJ Brown and CeeDee Lamb and Davante Adams, Amon-Ra St. Brown and Garrett Wilson. I like drafting from there, and I love drafting the guys that come in tier 3 to me as well.
Yeah, wide receiver. You know, so I've had a hard time getting our guy Brandon Ayuk because Gibbs and Hall fall in round 4. But maybe I can get Ayuk in 4 and Hall in round 5 now. And we are constructing the perfect draft here.
There man, we go.
Ayuk is shooting up the draft boards, and I just I'm guilty of it. But wide receiver, get him early. I mean, we know this. This is the way that fantasy football has been trending the last half dozen years or whatever. But especially in full PPR, load up on your receiver. And again, I think the aspect of this that can be overlooked is, seriously, after round 7 and 8, good luck. It really does get tough to get a productive, useful wide receiver once we get past those rounds. So you really, really have to attack the position. Whereas is tight end and quarterback, just so many options available there.
if you look at just consensus ADP, if you, not like best ball sites, but just the big redraft providers, seasonal providers, no shock that Brandon Ayuk is the highest ranked on Yahoo, 62nd overall. And I wonder why that would be, probably because of two guys on this very podcast. But yeah, I think that's how you're approaching receiver. And your point about kind of these double digit round guys, like really, it's a tough bet. You know, once you start getting to kind of, I think it falls off around, I mean, in consensus ADP, you know, it's wide receiver 50, which is Elijah Moore, which is stupid. He should not be ranked wide receiver 50. He should be going almost like 10 spots higher than that, in my opinion. But that's where it does get tough. I mean, there are bets I like in that range. Even I think it's even lower than that, right? Like there are, again, Rashad Bateman's in 53. That's fine. Honestly, I sometimes kind of like taking the boring guys there occasionally. Like, I know I'm getting bankable production from Jacoby Myers. I know I'm getting bankable production from some players like that. But really, it's just like it's a floor play. And I am trying to kind of hit those more home runs in the later rounds at times. And like somebody's going to drop Jacoby Myers at some point. Like you can just pick him up then in the season if you need him from a depth perspective. So I think that's a good approach. And just on the rookie receiver strategy, because you mentioned that. Do you typically draft these guys? Because I kind of always say you can end up being the player that picks them up instead of the player that drops a Jonathan Mingo or a Rashee Rice or Jaden Reed. You know, it's probably a little bit different from the round one guys this year, like Addison and Jackson Smith and Jigba and Zay Flowers and Quinton Johnston. Although Johnson, you know, I think there's a chance he might start a little slow. You never know with just how this preseason's gone. I don't know. I'm rambling a lot there a little bit, but like, yeah, I think the receiver stuff, I typically try to get those rookies like as they're starting to rise during the season rather than drafting them unless it's a best ball draft.
I'm all in on Jackson Smith and Jigba. Have him as a borderline top 25 fantasy wideout, drafting him ahead of Tyler Lockett. I think he's going to emerge as the alpha in Seattle. Jerk. I am just all in there on him. I probably off base. I mean, I shouldn't argue with Mr. Reception Perception, but you love JSN too, right? You're just big
on
Lockett.
I love all those guys this year. Yeah. I'm just out the alpha in Seattle is disrespectful to both of the veterans there, if we're being honest.
All right. Okay. So I love JSN. I've been drafting him in round six. But I want to quickly talk before we move on, wide receiver Davante Adams, a guy whom I didn't expect to be in on this year whatsoever, but he's fallen outside of the top 15 overall in Yahoo drafts. Adams saw 180 targets last year. He led the NFL in air yards. I believe you would still consider him the best receiver in football. Correct me if I'm wrong.
He is. He's in the conversation with Justin Jefferson and Stephon Diggs to me. Like that's the top three. And I think Adams is second in the list right now. So he's in the conversation for sure.
Yeah, I'm worried about Jimmy G staying healthy as well as everyone is, but Aiden O'Connell looked competent, and Jimmy G's intermediate area is actually maybe an improvement. That's where Adams started running more routes last year under the new coaching. But Davante Adams has fallen behind A.J. Brown in Yahoo drafts. A.J. Brown was out-targeted by a teammate after Philly's bye week seven last year. By his own teammate, he was out-targeted after week seven last year, and he is going ahead of Davante Adams right now. I mean, that seems a little bit mispriced. Thoughts?
I have Davante Adams as receiver 8. I hear your point though. In that, I mean, you got him at receiver 9, so we're in the same zone. But I think from an overall perspective,
I need to move him. Yeah,
you need to move him up, pal. If you're giving this That's little right. soliloquy here, but from an overall perspective, yeah, I would rather take Davante Adams than, I'm just looking at like our overall rankings right now. I would rather have him than Jonathan Taylor. I love Derrick Henry this year, but I'd rather have him than Derrick Henry. Even Tony Pollard, like I really, really like Tony Pollard, but I'd probably rather take Pollard. But, you know, Josh Jacobs, I'd rather have Davante Adams. So, yeah, I think he is going. He should still be like a fringe round one, round two pick. He's still that good. And he can excel in all of the Jimmy G routes, too, as well, by the way.
That's it. Yeah, totally. I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, he's just fallen a bit here, and it was just kind of I guess he got injured too, so that makes sense. He'll probably settle back in at the end of the first. This is just a blip here. But man, that was just eye-opening when I was looking up. AJ Brown is going ahead of Adams in Yahoo leagues. The hate has gone a bit too far. He's just put up, you know, he's been the most productive fantasy player since 2020, and it's not even close if you look at spike weeks.
Yep, I totally agree with you. Okay, so that's kind of how we're approaching receiver. It's just find the right buckets and find the values there. And just hit it hard, man. Honestly, like hit it hard early, hit it hard in the mid rounds, you know, tier three. And then, I mean, for me and my, in like the fourth tier type guys, I really think there are still some target hogs there that if things break right, you know, Deontay Johnson, Michael Pittman, DJ Moore has a chance to be a target hog in his offense. Like, I like taking those guys and just like hoping the quarterback situation breaks right and they can have that big season. Those are kind of my favorite targets there. And yeah, always with receivers, try to create complementary rosters. Like, if you're going to be a Jerry Jeudy guy or a Mike Williams guy, or even like a Mike Evans or a Jahan Dotson guy, even a Gabe Davis guy or a George Pickens guy, like those volatile players, make sure you secure yourself with some of these like higher floor guys that also have some upside from a target volume perspective. So, Dalton, before we get out of here, quick thoughts at the tight end position. I know you're just saying super, super late, and I think that's fair. I'm okay with Kelce as a round one selection. It's got to kind of be the right spot. He goes high in Yahoo drafts. He's like the 10th overall player. I'm okay with that, although Scott and Andy have him ranked from a high, really high from an overall perspective. So Kelce, I'm okay with. I haven't been drafting much of like Mark Andrews or TJ Hockenson in a traditional redraft league, but I do like Darren Waller as a mid round pick. Otherwise, and we've both talked about Pat Freiermuth and how much we like him. He's kind of my, all right, it's round 10. I haven't taken a tight end. Pat Freiermuth, auto click there. That's kind of my strategy at tight end. But if you miss out on those guys and you are going super late for the upside bets, what type of players do you like to target from like a not player name necessarily, but what kind of guys from an archetype perspective are you looking for?
First of all, I'm not taking the Kelce as a top 15 pick, but I know everyone disagrees with that. I love Darren Waller, but he's becoming popular. Kyle Pitts, if he falls to round 7 or 8, man, I do find myself scooping him up. Good tweet from Mario Puig. Pitts has drawn 8 defensive pass interferences on his last 169 targets. 8. Kelce has drawn three on his last 286. Andrews 4 in his last 250 plus. So I mean, explosion is coming if he can get healthy. But in general, I'm waiting on this position. I know you'll agree with me here. If Freiermuth you can get in the 9th or 10th, I think that's a home run. Otherwise, I can wait even longer and get two of Tyler Higbee, Sam Laporta, Cole Kmet, Chig, Dalton Kincaid, Dalton Schultz, Hunter Henry, Hayden Hurst, Luke Musgrave, Jake Ferguson. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on and on. And just get two or three of them and you'll be fine at a position that perennially looks deeper before the season than it ends up. And there are question marks for all these guys going, even if you totally believe in Kelce, not worried about the age, there are certainly question marks with all the rest. You know, Andrews has a bunch more target competition. Hockenson was incredibly unproductive on those targets in Minnesota, and things may change with Addison. You know, my guy George Brittle, you know, he has touchdown regression, and he saw a 13% target share when everyone was healthy on the Niners. So I don't like that mid range at all. Dallas Goedert, Harmon, guess how many targets inside the 10 Dallas Goedert has averaged over the last 3 seasons?
Not a lot, I would imagine, since he has the best rushing quarterback down there in that range. They run the ball a lot and they have other good players.
3 per year. Three targets inside the 10 per year over the last 3 years. That's why his Vegas over-under is 3.5 touchdowns this year. And people are drafting him like totally in the middle rounds ahead of Freiermuth. I don't get that one. So yeah, I'd say wait on the tight end position and then draft 2 of them or 3 if your league is deeper than some.
I'm pretty sure there was a point in this podcast the last few months where you're like, or at the very beginning of the offseason where you're like, don't let me talk myself into late round tight end again. But I'm glad to see that you're completely back into it.
No. I always talk myself into the tight end is deep. And like I talk myself into these guys. Yeah. They're all going to be stars. Now I'm like the opposite. No, they're all going to flop. So might as well just wait and take and attack
just
it by volume.
About it. I think if you are platooning tight ends, which I'm fine with, unless I take Pat Freiermuth, I like to take one of these boring volume guys like Tyler Higbee or Dalton Schultz, and then get you like a Sam Laporta or a Luke Musgrave. But really, like, I've really come around to Chig being a great late round tight end target. Basically after the Dulcich stuff that we talked about on the podcast yesterday, I've just flip flopped like Dulcich and Chig in my rankings. Basically, it was like, if you're going to take an upside late round tight end, like the one of the last ones to take a tight end one, like, just go ahead and take Chig, because I think there's a chance he could be the second most valuable pass catcher on that team ahead of Treylon Burks, like, because how good he was after the catch. There are questions to be answered, but he was really awesome last year. And just like, if he takes that step, it could be exciting, even though there are a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions to this entire position. So kind of tandem it up with like boring volume guy, high floor player, and like one big home run swing.
Yeah, Chig way up there in yards per route run. I love him, but I do worry he's the next Albert Zero for me. The coaches even came out and said he's got a block better recently, and DeAndre Hopkins is there, but absolutely fits our model. I mean, he's not being drafted as a top 12 tight end. Sure, a ton of upside, as much as any tight end being drafted in that area.
This is a great discussion. This is a great exercise here with Dalton in constructing a perfect roster, but we're not done necessarily because, hey, guess what? Speaking of the perfect roster, there is no other player on earth right now that would be a better start for your fantasy dream team than Minnesota Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson. Oh, well, maybe not according to Dalton, who has Ja'Marr Chase ranked as the number one receiver ahead of Justin Jefferson. Let's get Justin Jefferson's thoughts on who should be the first ranked receiver in fantasy right now. All right, very excited to welcome to the show now. You've probably heard of him before. It's the best wide receiver in football. It's Minnesota Vikings star Justin Jefferson here with Sleep Number. Justin, what's going on, man?
How you doing?
I'm doing great. No complaints. I am ready for these real games to kick off. Preseason was a nice little taste, man, but it's good to get things back up and popping again. Hey, I know you teamed up this year with Sleep Number and Ja'Marr Chase for a new NFL campaign. That's got to be pretty exciting for you. Why don't you tell us about it?
Definitely exciting. One, to partner up with Sleep Number going on the third year. It's definitely been amazing. And with the commercial, just teaming up with Ja'Marr, it just being like old days again, just being together, connected with one another, laughing and enjoying that time with us being on top of the game.
Yeah, you guys are definitely on top of the game right now. You know, you and I had a really good conversation at the Super Bowl about, you know, kind of bet your role back in that LSU offense and how that almost kind of caused some people to like misevaluate you a little bit as like just a slot guy. But a lot of that was because, you know, you had a guy out there playing big time X receiver in Ja'Marr Chase, and he was a special player. What makes Ja'Marr such like a unique special receiver and a guy that, you know, and as a person as well?
Yeah, I mean, you just never really know when he's gonna hit that speed on you. He also has that physicality to run through tackles, push through cornerbacks. So he definitely has that ability to adjust when the ball is in the air. Of course, he has a great guy throwing to him in Joe Burrow. So their connection is definitely, you know, haven't left since the first time they have been together at LSU. And I'm excited to always see what they have in store. They're always getting, you know, late in the playoffs and making it to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, I guess we'll see what they do this year. And we play them this year, so it's going to be exciting.
Oh, how excited are you for that, to see those guys on the other side of the sideline?
I'm ready. Because we played them after my second year. Well, my second year. And we lost. So, definitely excited to see them this year playing in Cincinnati again. So we definitely need that. I definitely need that revenge.
Yeah, time to get a little revenge there. That should be pretty exciting. You know, there's like a generally in fantasy this year, you're going first overall. Like, and I think, by the way, I think that's the right choice. But there's a small faction of people, and I don't think they're wrong about this, that think like Ja'Marr could actually maybe be the top receiver in fantasy this year, you know, for a variety of different reasons. He could maybe have the season that you, Justin Jefferson, did last year. You think it's possible that he could have that type of season this year?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't put it past him. He definitely can have that type of season this year. And it goes to show you in college, you know, having 1,700 yards, 20 touchdowns is not easy, especially having me and Terrace Marshall next to him. So I definitely think he could. I'm always hoping that he does the best. Him and Joe do the best that they can. But, you know, we're brothers at the end of the day. Of course, we're always going to compete with each other because we play the same position. But I definitely think I'm going to have a better season than him anyway.
So even if you don't get cute with it, still take Justin Jefferson first overall in your fantasy draft. That's what I heard from that. I want to talk a little bit about route running with you here for a minute, Justin. You know, I told you about the series I do, Reception Perception, where I'm charting wide receivers and how often you guys get open, where you line up the whole thing. Last year, you'd be happy to know that you were top three in all three of my main categories, success rate versus zone, press, and man coverage. You actually were number one in success rate versus press while being double covered more than any other receiver I charted last year. So I think you've always been a fantastic route runner, in my opinion. But what tweaks, if any, did you make to kind of take your game to, I think, a truly elite level last year?
Yeah, just buying into KO's system, seeing the different things that he had for me in store. Just coming off the Super Bowl champ year with him and Cooper Kupp, Cooper Kupp having three crown, just different reasons and that I enjoyed to for him to really come in and give us that playbook. Just having that connection with Kirk, building that connection with Kirk every single year, him having that confidence in me. I feel like I have the most confidence in the league to go up and get any ball that is thrown to me. And I feel like, he's trusting me more and more every single year.
Yeah, I think that specific part of your guys' connection has been awesome to watch. Hey, I would love to get who you think are the top five route runners in the NFL right now. And I would love to compare your list to mine. I think we'll both have you on our list, but who do you think are the top five route runners? You give your list, I'll give my list. We'll see how we compare.
I'll say a 1A and 1B, me and Davante Adams.
Nice.
I'll definitely say Davante Adams, one of the best route running. I definitely grew up watching his tape and being a fan of his. And I definitely have to give that respect. Me being in the league and me being on top. So I'll say me and Davante Adams is one or two. I definitely was a fan of Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen definitely has one of the best routes and releases, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Was number four. I will have to say either Stephon Diggs. I'll probably have to say Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
And then number five, I'll say Jamar.
Yeah. I'll say Jamar. Not a bad list there. Pretty similar. I'd actually put Steph Diggs at number one and 1A, 1B, you and Stephon Diggs there. For me at number three, Davante Adams, it's tough, but I'm putting him at three. I think, honestly, like anybody wants to put those top three in any order, I'm not going to fight you for it. Like that's the clear top three to me. I actually have AJ Brown at four. I've always been a real big fan of him as a route runner. He's so explosive. And I think last year he showed that he was really good as a over-the-top guy as well.
For sure.
Think that was special. And five is so tough, man. You could go with an ultra-unique guy at Cooper Kupp. I think, people forget how good Calvin Ridley was. The Lifetime Achievement Award should definitely go to Keenan Allen, like you said. But I'll go with a guy I've always loved in Tyler Lockett. I don't think there's anybody better at, working back to the quarterback on when you sell that vertical route. Yeah. So I'll go with Tyler Lockett there. And that's that's one of my guys. He's always been one of my guys.
That's not a bad list. That's not a bad list at all. I don't mind that one.
All right. Well, good. I'll take that as a little bit of validation from you, Justin. Last couple of things here. Number one, I mentioned that double coverage stat earlier that you had the most double coverage last year in the NFL, according to my receiver charting. What was one defense that was, maybe it's a difficult cornerback. Maybe they had a unique game plan going against you last year that you went up and just halfway through the game, you're like, man, this is a tough challenge.
Really all of the teams that play Shell. Play with the safety over top, just watching me every move, that's one of the toughest things. This is the NFL, so they don't have anybody just cream cake, you can go up and just beat at any time, and then to also have someone else guarding you, waiting for you to come across the middle, waiting for you to go over top so they can stay over top of you. So that's when it makes more difficult, when there's two people guarding you, three people guarding you. But I'll probably have to say, Detroit did that last year. Green Bay did it the second game. Who else?
I thought the Giants were definitely kind of on top of that at one point. I mean, Giants, you ended up having a great game against the Giants. And that Lions one, I'm glad you pointed out, because that was a pretty unique one. That one stood out in my mind as well. Hey, last thing for you, Justin. I know you're busy, so you got a lot of stuff going on here. I'm a big wide receiver guy, as you can tell. I would love to see someone hit 2,000 receiving yards one of these years. Do you ever think about you being the first guy to do it, and is that something you're aiming for?
It's definitely a chance. I've been getting 200 extra yards every single year. ever since I got into the league. So this is definitely a year where I would get to 2,000 if that, you know, 200 mark does continue. You know, my main priority right now is just to win at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, just getting to those playoffs, winning and getting to that big stage in the Super Bowl. So there's things that I have accomplished, you know, records that I have been broken. But you know, the main thing is to win at this point. To you know, not be slept on, have people really, you know, give us a chance to think that we can get to the Super Bowl. So it's all about proving everybody wrong, proving that we can win, and we can win in those big games.
Hey, you know, I would love to see that. You and I had a great conversation last Super Bowl. I'd love to actually just be watching the Super Bowl last year, man.
For sure.
So I'm rooting for you, rooting for the Vikings. Would love to see it. Hey, Justin Jefferson, appreciate your time this morning, man. Really appreciate it. And everybody out there, make sure you're checking out what Justin's got going on with Jamar Chase and Sleep Number, and just be dialed in. We'll be rooting for you, Justin. Stay healthy this year and have a great season.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, that's going to do it for today's show, my people. Shout out to Justin Jefferson and Dalton Del Don for joining me today. If it's a social media app, Yahoo Fantasy is there, at Yahoo Fantasy on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Matt Harmon _BYB. Dalton is at Dalton Del Don, although don't expect to see any tweets from that account. You can also watch this show on YouTube at Yahoo Sports. Speaking of social, by the time you're listening to this, you've probably seen the announcement. Yes, Eckler's Edge is back for its first episode of the season tomorrow, so be sure to listen to that. Until then, we're out.